Do you know a high schooler who is a natural leader and loves to give back to their community? The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Student Visionaries of the Year program might be the perfect opportunity. Forming strong teams to support them, Student Visionaries of the Year candidates fundraise for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. This 7-week philanthropic leadership development program helps students gain valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship. Not to mention, it looks great on college applications. But most importantly, it's a chance for students to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on the lives of blood cancer patients and their families. Learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the Jill on Money Show. It's Sunday, March 24th, and today we are airing the second part of my interview with Anat Admati. She's a super smart professor of finance and economics at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. She is out with an expanded edition of her book from almost 10 years ago. Gosh, I can't believe how this time goes by. It's called The Banker's New Clothes, What's Wrong with Banking and What to Do About It. This new and expanded edition, and so it's 11 years later. It's amazing to me that the things going on in the banking sector really still continue to confound regulators. And so in this part of our interview with Anat, we are going to talk about rules that could be implemented right now to make the banking system more secure and less confusing. Give me the Anat Admati three rules. I don't know, maybe I'm making it too simple. I don't know. But are there three rules that could be implemented that would shore up the system and make it less confusing for regulators?
So we have advocated since 2010, and that's the start of the battle before we went into the bunker to write this book. For a whole year, I organized letters from 20 academics, and they were all saying, wait a minute, you know, you are allowing banks and, you know, rules that's made in Basel, Switzerland, to have 3% equity to total? Nobody lives like that. No healthy corporation lives like that. Even banks didn't used to live like that before they had all the safety nets. Now, we were saying in that at least 15% equity to total. And in the book, we say between 20 and 30, and nothing is wrong with that. They think it's like the craziest idea. Now, here's your sources of equity. First of all, your earnings, your own earnings. Every business can reinvest. I mean, a lot of companies, very successful. Warren Buffett, don't pay dividends. They just reinvest. So what's the problem with reinvesting? The more the bank hate doing it and want to take money out, the more they behave like insolvent, you know, very distressed borrowers, because you always want the money out. Now, retain the earnings, issue equity. If they issue equity, just sell equity to investors. If investors will give them a low price for it, that's only evidence that they're too heavily subsidized, that the business model is based on subsidies, is based on cheap funding subsidized by all of us to put all of us at risk. That's what's going on, basically. Now, what you do is you immediately build up their equity buffers. And what I think will happen in that case, if you do this and you don't let, you basically, when they pay out the equity, when they pay a dividend or a dividend or buy back shares, they don't shrink. They replenish it with debt. They just keep the equity very low as a fraction of the total. Now, if you help that make them build equity, I believe some of the biggest ones will just break down the way the inefficient conglomerates broke down on their own inefficient weight. They are so monstrous and so big, like JP Morgan Chase and a few of the others, that they just get away with being so big because they can always fund themselves because they're too big to fail. So it's very privileged position, and it's extraordinarily unhealthy because they can get away with everything. They're like literally above the law. The last chapter of the book is called Above the Law, and it's really about lawlessness.
Yeah. And you know what? I thought that was so interesting because it does seem like the solution of building up equity buffers, it seems so spot on and easy. It means that, you know, these hundreds and thousands of pages of regulation of Dodd-Frank, which, by the way, a lot of the banks wrote as they were going along and helped write. And I get it. I understand, like, what they're it was too big for anyone to put their arms around. But if we were to build up these equity buffers and it were to lead to more smaller institutions that focused on certain things. So if JP Morgan Chase could say, you know, here is my investment bank, here is my utility, my bank, like the pipes of the banking system, and that runs separately, and this is our real estate arm, that might make it all a lot easier for investors to value, but also for the regulators to understand, because I just don't think the regulators really understand the complexity of some of these businesses.
Completely. In other words, everything about them is too opaque. No investor. I was in Davos, Switzerland in 2014 with Paul Singer, of all people, a very shrewd Elliott, you know, investor. And he said, and Kevin Warsh and other people who know very well what's going on, these are black boxes. You cannot understand their risk. We need to make them more transparent, simpler structures, and much more equity. And that's just doable. It's just doable starting today. Even you don't need new laws. You just need the regulators to do what they're supposed to be doing. So it's very infuriating to see a no-brainer right here available any day you want. You decide you have the political will to do it. So from that point on, it's really what I discovered. It's just all about sheer plain political power and a symbiosis between the politicians and the bankers that is really quite spectacular.
Okay, just fantasy land for one second. Suspend disbelief with me and go on this journey. Would it be actually possible, and I know this is never going to happen, but just play with me, that whoever wins this election gets into office and says, these banks, I don't care about them. Neither of them is going to run for office again. I don't care. I'm going to make the system safer. Would Congress have to be on board with coming to the conclusion of increasing capital buffers, or could the regulators themselves do it without any political input?
They have every authority to do it. In fact, in Dodd-Frank, the first Title I of Dodd-Frank is all about safety and soundness. Mm. And it specifically says to solve the too big to fail problem. And then it has a fallback on it on Title II, which I was also involved in, which is, you know, resolution, make them able to fail without bailout. That is a complete failure. And the book explains why this is not going to happen for global banks, to the point that we question whether banks need to be global, in other words, operating in many countries at all, because they cannot. Even now, Credit Suisse happened at the same time, very close to when SVB happened in March 2023, and they bailed out everybody, pretty much, almost everybody. Even though they told us that they'll be bail-in and not bail-out, they provided enormous bailout to a spectacularly large bank in Switzerland. Okay, now it's UBS and it's twice GDP. It's huge. In any case, all these promises were not met, okay, in Title II. And Title I of Dodd-Frank Act gives regulators every authority to do what they need to do. Some of them the authorities were already there before. So no law is necessary. In 2013, two people from the Senate, from both sides of the aisle, Senator Sherrod Brown, who's still there, a Democrat, and no longer there, Senator David Vitter, a Republican from Louisiana, proposed 15% equity to total for the largest six banks. It was called Brown-Vitter. Even though the Senate voted unanimously to eliminate too big to fail subsidies, they didn't even get to discuss this proposal, which, to your question, wasn't even necessary. It was only telling regulators, hey, get on your feet and do it. And nobody did anything.
So are you saying that Jay Powell, right this second, just to screw with the world, just for fun, he's like, I'm not going to get another term. I am the chief regulator of the United States banking system, the Federal Reserve Bank, that he could almost unilaterally impose this rule and have to just, and everyone would have to carry it out. I mean, the people would go insane. It would be great. It would be fun to cover. But that could happen by fiat of the Federal Reserve Bank?
The regulators of the banks are mostly the Federal Reserve, the OCC, and the FDIC. Now, they together are the ones that recently proposed something, and the banks went nuts when they proposed it. And it was really nothing what I want, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and they still, even Jay Powell was not sure and skeptical. So right now this battle is going on, and, you know, your listeners may have heard, you know, ads on television and in podcasts and other things about this Basel endgame and how awful it will be. I submitted two policy comments to the Fed on January 16th, just about 6 weeks ago. And in that, I attached a document, all available on my website, with 44 flawed claims that are made by lobbyists. And there's a whole grab bag of them. Now, the lobbying is so cynical. And a lot of the people in D.C., and I was just in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, are always bringing somebody like me, what about this, and what about this, and what about the shadow banks, and what about lending, and what about... And there's answers to all of those things. It's just that there are so many, there's so much nonsense in this debate. And so much of it is so entrenched that it's very hard to speak sense to these people and convince them to take these steps and not to be so scared of all these threats, these disingenuous threats. If Jamie Dimon says, I won't make a particular loan, it's only because he doesn't want to make that loan, not because he can't. Nothing in the regulation prevents him from making any loan. He has trillions and trillions of dollars. Now, if he says it's not going to be worthy for me to make this loan, then we have to ask, what is it about the regulation that makes this particular loan to some business not attractive to him? We have a lot of credit in this economy, a lot of loans, a lot of payday loans, a lot of credit card loans. There's a lot of credit in the economy. When they go around saying, you know, somebody won't realize their dream, that is just so disingenuous, because once you give them the cheap funding that they want, the subsidized funding, with very little equity, they're going to do what they're going to do. They're going to chase returns, and they won't. You know, you can't make them by contract make a loan that they threaten not to make. Who knows? You know, you're their friends. They might make you a loan. So it's all very political in banking. You know, banks are where the money is, and they exploit their power all over politics and all over people.
So, I mean, I have to end with this question. You have passion. You have energy. You are... you know, just you're so passionate. It's amazing. And 11 years into the mission, you keep going. So what keeps you going?
I don't know that I keep going. I actually took a big break from 2015, 16. In 15, 16, after 5 years of, you know, 5-6 years of doing it almost 24/7. And really because I just felt like it's my duty. I just felt like it's so confusing to people. And I do understand it, and I can find ways to explain it. People like you are helping me, you know, communicate to people so I could connect with people with what I have to say and my insights. And, you know, it's my duty to do that. It's a broad educational mission. I'm an academic in a nonprofit. Of course, for most of my colleagues, that's just, you know, too political and too crazy and too in the mud. So I kept going for a while. I also hated to be worn out by these people, because that's what they want. They want to wear you out. And because they have numerous paid lobbyists to counter you all the time. And then I took a break from 2016. When Ben Bernanke wrote his book, The Courage to Act, I published an op-ed saying, where is the courage? Like, he had the courage to save, but he didn't have the courage to stop a dividend. You know what I mean? And I wrote this op-ed. I wrote essays about, you know, all the enablers of the system. Whenever you have very, you know, very persistent wrongdoings or things that are wrong, there are a lot of enablers that benefit from the situation. You know, they hide sexual harassment in the church. I called the paper, It Takes a Village to Maintain a System. Just like it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a village to abuse a child, in the movie Spotlight. Anyway, so I kind of departed recognizing that I'm up against many enablers of the system. And that was the years in which regulation went backwards. And, you know, Donald Trump came and had some the reversal of some rules, but they were just slightly going backwards at that in those years. And in the decade anniversary of the book, it was like, can I go back to banking? And Jill, I'll tell you, I'm suffering from enormous PTSD symptoms right now, just being back there. When I set to write my comment letters on President's Day, we cleared my weekend to write these. It was Groundhog Day. Didn't I write this 1,000 times before? I attached a list of all the testimonies and comment letters and short pieces and long pieces in my book and all of this again. And it's pretty hopeless. So I do wonder, you know, I can't do anything. What I'm lacking, I have passion, I have knowledge, I have expertise. I don't have power. power turns out to be important here, raw power. I am a finance professor, so I didn't know about these things, but now I do because I realize how I don't have power.
And yet you keep going. You wrote the second edition. You're out on your book tour. And I can't thank you enough for continuing the fight. I sort of feel like you're one of the good guys or gals who, despite the obstacles that come in your path, just keep pushing. And so I am delighted that you've done it. I'm glad that you weren't 100% worn out. You might get worn out after this round, but you know what? I have a feeling you're going to come back again because I do think that the fix is so simple. That's the thing that's fascinating to me. We have so much complexity in the financial system. The fix is so simple. It's such an elegant solution. It is not something where you need to have, it's almost like the more complex that your solution is, the worse it's going to be. That's how I knew Dodd-Frank was going to be a complete loser. I said, as soon as I saw how big that bill was, I was like, that's not going to work. And yours, this idea of just saying, it's kind of simple. There's too much borrowing going on. Most companies, most households, most of any institution is running with enough of an equity buffer to protect it. And that would protect all of us. And for anyone who's sort of anti-regulation, I would encourage you to understand just how much it costs all of us to bail out Silicon Valley Bank and all their depositors who had more than $250,000, in some case, millions of dollars in accounts that we subsidized. The bank said, oh no, we paid for it with more fees. But you know what? We all pay for that in the system because the bank's fees go up, then we get paid a fraction of the interest that we're due. Anat Admati, thank you so much for joining us. The book is called The Banker's New Clothes, What's Wrong with Banking? If you want to comment on this, you want to tell us what's going on, or you have a question about your financial life, just go to jillonmoney.com and click the Contact Us button. We'd be delighted to hear from you. Don't forget the book, The Great Money Reset, my book is out in paperback. We have a link to that on the website. And so too do we have a link for our YouTube show called Jill on Money, powered by The Compound. You should check that out. All right, put your hands on someone's back, either physically or metaphorically. Change your work. Change your wealth, change your life. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.